Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 17 of season 4. This one is called Night Terrors. It was directed by Les Landau. Teleplay goes to Pamela Douglas and Jerry Taylor, and the story goes to Sherry Goodhartz. It aired back on March 31st, 1991. In this episode, the Enterprise is searching a binary star system in an effort to find the USS Britain. When all of a sudden things go haywire, they find a murdered crew, and then all of a sudden nobody can sleep. So, me, Sean, and Clay are going to talk about night terrors right after this.
I've been studying the autopsy reports. The conclusion is appalling. There was no outside source, no alien presence. All 34 of them appear to have killed each other.
What could have caused such an event? Drugs? A virus? Poison?
Toxicological tests showed no unusual substances in their systems, and they all appear to be in good health, but for whatever reason, they seem to turn against each other, using phasers and knives and bare hands.
Were you guys any good at chemistry in high school, college?
No.
No, not me.
Chemistry was when I realized I needed to pick a fine art field for my profession.
Yeah, I might be the same. Chemistry is when I kind of realized... Chemistry was the first time I felt like I was being challenged. Not that this is like a brag or anything, but it was the first time I realized, like, oh, there's just some things I'm never going to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately for us, this episode features the easiest bit of chemistry, which is hydrogen. We're going to talk about night terrors here. So, Sean and Clay, how are you guys?
Good.
Hey, good. How you doing, guys?
Good. It's been a while, and, you know, I've sort of been leading into season 4 saying that season 4 is not as impressive. It's kind of a letdown season. Modi, who frequently comes on here, mentioned that he thought it was kind of like a second sophomore slump after the third season was very good, and you can just kind of throw away the first two seasons because they weren't really the show. We had been tweeting before, Sean, you had mentioned that you must have been watching the episodes when you tweeted and you said that this is not very good. I think Night Terrors is okay. I don't know where you guys want to take it anywhere from there, but I think Night Terrors is pretty okay, if that's a way to lead off.
It was better than I remember. So I usually skip this one because it has too much Deanna Troi in it. And I think her floating around and the nether world or whatever is still very strange, but I liked it because it really highlighted Data, and it's a good Data episode if you look at it that way.
I don't know why they thought it was okay to leave the ship in his control again, because we know at this point, who knows what the hell he's going to do once he has control of the ship. And also, how expendable is the crew that he can run the entire bridge by himself?
Yeah, oh, man. And he can just send everybody to bed and just sort of hang out by himself.
It's very lucky there isn't like two adventures or two crises that hit them at the same time. Like, what if Data's dad called him as Data was letting everybody sleep?
You can get away with, I think, a little bit of that criticism, Clay, because reminded me of the Royale in a way, because every bad decision I put to the script, I was like, well, they're all very tired. Like, everyone's just making bad decisions because they're very tired, and that's why Data's allowed to take control. That's why Patrick Stewart is given some of his finest acting, I think, in this season.
Oh, Patrick Stewart is by far my favorite part of this episode. The scene where they're in the conference room, and I think Data and maybe Troi, can't remember if Troi is there, but Data is giving a presentation on what's going on, and they just cut back to Picard, and he's got this look on his face. Like, it's the Picard doesn't understand science look times about a million, and it's amazing.
Yep, he has a similarly great look when Troi and Data are in the Reddit room and Troi's explaining what's happening to him.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. I think it's that scene. Yeah.
He's completely sort of out of it. I think I like this episode just because, Sean, you were saying there's a bit too much Deanna Troi. I felt that there, I remembered this episode being much more Troi than it actually is. I don't even know if you can call this a Troi episode.
You're right. And I felt the same way you did. I thought this was like, when you see the little box on Netflix, you're like, oh, fuck, another Troi episode. But when you sit down and watch it, she's not in it that much, but she's still terrible in it.
Yeah, well, she's... Go ahead.
My issue with the Troi episodes, and since I, you know, I'm only watching them as I'm doing the show, so correct me if I'm wrong, but what does it say about her character where it seems to be the only time that she gets stuff to do, there has to be another Betazoid in the episode? I feel like all of her episodes start with, oh, he's a Betazoid. And then, you know, that's the only way she can be involved in the plot.
That's true. Or her mother is around. Yeah. Who's another right. Betazoid. Yeah. It's this right. guy. Yeah.
Sorry. I have to say this now so I don't forget. Mm-hmm. My second favorite, or I guess you could say my least favorite part of the episode, is when Worf goes into his room, prepares himself to commit suicide. In walks Troi to stop him, and then she says, how are you feeling? That's literally your one job on the ship, is to know how people are feeling. When he says, I'm afraid, you should say, yeah, no, I just was making sure that you knew, or something. That's literally the only thing she's there to do.
Right.
He's at the height of his terror in that very moment.
You know, but Klingons actually respect suicide. So when he had a breakdown that he was about to kill himself, I don't get why he'd be so upset, because his culture embraces suicide as like a noble form of death.
Well, I guess he was ashamed of being scared, really. Like that's his major thing. But yeah, he certainly jumps to the idea that he's just going to off himself very, very easily. I actually remembered that I guess I haven't seen this one in a while. I remembered him actually stabbing himself, but that does not happen. But
that would have been much better, though.
Yeah,
that would have been much better. I think
you can save him instead, like cut.
See, it's just like put the batlet between two pillows and just leaned over and just falling on top of it.
And then, but he doesn't kill himself, so it's character building to show you how much of a failure of a Klingon he is.
He should have done the traditional Klingon is. You know, you put a pipe into the warp drive nacelle and just, you know, tape it through your window of your room and just like sit in there as the exhaust fills. That'd be ideal. Let's, I guess I'll start this one off by saying I was surprised that it's not really much of a Troi episode. I remember this episode as being the episode where Troi floats around for like 45 minutes, and that's really not the case. It's the worst part of the episode, but it's not that bad. I actually like the... it's the first time I've sort of been impressed with an alien voice over on the show.
Yeah, I thought the alien actually was pretty cool. I liked it because I'm a sucker for, you know, like the unknowable cosmic stuff. And whatever she was talking to, they visualized it in a way where it was pretty abstract.
Yep.
But also pretty imposing, and so I thought that was all right. They could have done well with a little bit less her floating around. It reminded me of, do you guys know the SNL bit, the Tracy Morgan bit, Astronaut Jones?
No, I don't think so.
Well, I recommend you look it up, but it felt a lot like that.
I can imagine. I think it was a smart idea to not show the aliens in this.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I like how we never meet them.
Yes, even at the end.
Like they're, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, I always thought that was pretty intriguing.
I think the show is starting to hit a period where it's getting a little bit meta. Like Clay, we had talked about, they had the, in the First Contact episode, they had the, it was kind of tongue-in-cheek Riker boning that chick. You know, like the show is treating that as a very sort of absurd situation that they're winking at. This one's getting that where they're, if not meta, they're getting aware that they don't always need to like meet the alien at the end, you mm-hmm. know? And in the episode after this, I think they do something similar to that. But it's not bad. And I thought this is kind of a creepy episode. The Crusher sick base or the dead bodies of the hangar is a great scene.
That scene I thought was really good. I think the rest of the dream spilling into reality stuff that they did doesn't really land. But that one is really good.
I liked the it was kind of a slow build, but I liked the Picard getting annoyed by the doorbell Like, that's the
that
kind of,
was, yeah, that was pretty good too. Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of like The Shining or something. It's like you look at it once and then you kind of just give up and you just start like rubbing your head as like this thing just constantly dings and you can't figure out what's wrong with it. I thought it was just kind of a neat thing, and I don't think they've done an episode, correct me if I'm wrong, where the crew is sort of losing it, and I like the idea of the crew losing it. It's solid,
so
enjoyable.
One of the reasons I feel like I tend to be biased against this episode is because it's inherently a difficult idea, because it's supposed to be. It's like Schindler's List was an amazing movie, but it is kind of a drag.
Right.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's not something that you would watch over and over, but it's not really the storyteller's fault because it's a tricky subject. So, you know, the crew losing REM sleep and having a very difficult, you know, 45 minutes. It's not an episode I would rewatch, but I can see why on a first viewing it would be. It does have a lot of validity because they don't really go there very often with these topics.
I think the REM sleep thing is a step too far. I think if they had just made them not be able to sleep at all, it would have been a lot easier to buy. When they push in on Crusher and she's like, "We're suffering from dream deprivation," I was like, who cares? And like, so her explaining that, oh well, everybody needs to dream, if you don't dream you'll go insane, it's like, well, I mean, right, okay,
but well, she even gets more dramatic. I think she says, if we don't dream we die, which is like
and it's that's a really for an episode that already has Troy floating inside an abstract concept, that's another abstract concept that's kind of hard to grasp onto.
Yeah.
So if it had just been like, you know, they had gone crazy because they just can't sleep and like Troy is the only one who can sleep, then I think it would have been a little bit more accessible.
Yeah, I thought it was them bringing it all back to Star Trek with an explanation that didn't really need to be there at that point. Like the it felt like they were trying to give a little bit of a techno babble explanation as to what was going on. I think you're right, where if they were just sleep deprived, it would have been just as good. You could just have the alien communication is making them have hallucinations. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
Well, I agree, but to play devil's advocate,
sure,
they have all this medicine. Why wouldn't they be able to just tranquilize you to put you asleep?
Yeah,
because then you would at least be resting. But
why don't they have all this other medicine that can give you dreams then?
The Crusher has a line.
It's called marijuana. Space pot.
Picard did look a little glazed over as he was trying to listen to those things. I think I kind of agree with it. Like it kind of drags a little bit when it starts hitting that point where they need to start explaining it. But I think if they were pitching this episode, they just would pitch it around like a whole bunch of creepy shit happens while the crew can't sleep. And I think this episode pulls it off, really. Like it doesn't disappoint me in that regard. I think it's directed. I think it could have really been kicked up a notch if they had like a horror director do this, you know. They stick with the regular TV guys. I was laughing at the beginning. I think one of the worst, they were kind of stuck in a hard spot, but some of the real bad, I don't even know if you'd call it direction, where they beam over to the Britain, right?
Mm-hmm.
They get on the bridge and the camera is like on them. Riker takes a step down and he's like, a body. And he's like, there's another one over there. And like the camera just slightly turns, and then he's like, they're everywhere. The camera just, you know, the camera pulls back, and there's like seven past or dead people on the bridge. It was a weird directional choice where you're like, why Riker can clearly see this from the start of the thing.
Yeah, they could have made a phone call over to the X-Files set to get Rob Bowman back for an episode.
Yeah, they probably should have. They'll do this better later on, but I just. If they had shot, they started to do it a little bit later where they dimmed the lights. They claimed the power's going out, which makes sense in terms of story, but it allows you to dim the lights and everyone looks a little bit more crazy and everything.
It's funny, in Voyager, they have happy, funny episodes and they have serious episodes. And you can tell immediately by how the bridge is lit.
That's interesting.
It's kind of reminded me of this one. This is a very dark, actually, this and the next episode, I felt very dark. Dimly lit episodes.
And I thought they did a really good job of either doing the makeup this way or just not putting anybody in makeup, because by the end, everybody looked like they were pretty frazzled.
They did.
I thought it was well acted. I thought everyone in here was doing pretty good. Riker.
Yeah.
Riker looked like he was just up all night, you know, with his trombone and his a couple lines of blow, and was just ready to go for it. But
well, let me ask you guys this. So there was this violence element to it. So if you don't get enough REM sleep, you eventually turn against each other, and that's introduced as like this disaster that happens on the ship.
Yeah.
So I like the no sleeping idea. I like everyone getting cranky and getting on each other's nerves. But driven to violence, I felt like that doesn't – they didn't explain that very well, or they didn't back it up very well.
Yeah, I was going to say I think one of the reasons they probably went for an explanation as sort of weird – is if you do it, if it had just been like, oh, well, it's the, you know, whatever, the radiation from the alien ship or something is making them go crazy, that's too much like the Naked Now or the Naked Time. Yeah. I can't remember what the hell it is.
Naked Now is TV. Yeah.
the naked Time. Ping.
Well, no, what is Naked Time is the name of the original series, right?
Yes. Naked Time is original. Naked Now is TNG.
Yeah. But, you know, that it's the same kind of thing. Where they, I mean, it's not, you know, there's nobody's having sex with Data, but it's the same kind of everybody's trapped in a hot room with no way out kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
I don't think it makes sense in terms of the science of them not sleeping and allowing this. I would have accepted it as a byproduct of the alien ship or the alien communication. I feel that would have made sense. I actually liked it.
Yeah.
Like, I liked the sort of the shit going on in 10 Forward with that one troublemaker. O'Brien gets another bar brawl episode, which is fantastic.
Until fucking Guinan pulls out a giant laser cannon and shoots the ship with it.
The first time we've seen, damage, because, like, sparkles fell down. So it obviously did something.
And this is while they're doing a very specific, very intricate science experiment by releasing hydrogen into this thing. She could have seriously damaged the ship. That's the worst time she should be firing off a gun in the 10 Forward.
That was such a last-minute gun prop.
Oh, it's terrible.
Well, you know what's funny is when you... So Whoopi Goldberg wasn't written into the show initially. So you wanted to be on because she was buddies with Geordi, right?
Yep.
And they describe her as during this time, she was extremely busy. She had Sister Act going on. She had all these other things going on. But she wanted to try to make time for Star Trek. So my question always has been, when they get Whoopi Goldberg and they put her in an episode, like some of the episodes really count for her character. Yeah. Some of them, she's just like a background prop. And I felt like this one was one of those times. So I'm curious, like, did they change? Oh, Whoopi's available. Quick, let's have a bar fight scene. We'll give her a laser cannon that shoots sparkles.
Yeah, interesting. Maybe.
I'm always curious how they implemented her.
Well, this episode, I think, is a good reversal angle on what we've talked about in the past about how you can have Guinan and you can have Troy, but you can't really have both of them because... theoretically, you would think this would affect Guinan. Like, well, she's not affected at all.
No, she seems fine. But it's hard to tell.
The only people on the ship who aren't affected by it are Guinan, and Data, and Troy.
Well, but, Troy still seems getting tired. That's the...
Right. The, but, you know, yeah. she's still dreaming or whatever. So, but
she's not going crazy, yeah.
But regardless, if that's a plot point you're bringing up and you're not bringing in the fact that Guinan seems to be fine, that's kind of a waste of something. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think you needed her. Like Sean was saying, I don't think you need her character in this one. You could have just random bartender, you know?
Right.
Who's equally tired.
And who then immediately gets court-martialed for firing off a rifle in the bar.
Guinan is such a Bob Marley peaceful character. For her to have like a fucking shotgun ready to go, like preloaded or whatever, that's pretty insane.
I thought it was a weird tone problem. Like I thought it was a joke they were trying to do, but it didn't work in the episode. Like what's going on?
The staging of it is terrible.
Yes.
Like we were saying, there's directing problems. That's a big one. They just it's so awkward the way that she reaches down and pulls out this really fake looking gun.
Yeah.
And it's really poorly done.
Pew 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 pew. And the oh Jesus, I forget what I was going to talk. Oh, I was you were mentioned it's kind of a reversal for Guinan and Troy. I think this is a pretty good Troy episode, if you want to call it a Troy episode, right? I feel she serves her purpose as well as she ever has in this one.
To an extent. I mean, she serves her purpose in that she is the only person who can deal with a problem. But again, I mean, it has – you really could have done this with literally anybody. Yeah, I mean, except they have to say that, oh, well, Betazoids have REM sleep on a different wavelength than humans or something. Okay, well, then why is Worf affected by it? Why is Worf the person who's doing it? You know, it's really – and that's why I find it really strange that it's like, well, it can't just be Troy. We have to make sure that there's some weight to Troy, so let's put another Betazoid in the episode. And it's just, I don't know, it feels like they're going – well, anytime they want to write for her, it feels like they're going out of their way to make sure nobody else could be part of the story.
Yeah, I was kind of glad that it wasn't a pure Data episode at the end of it.
Mm.
I was a little bit relieved. I felt it was nice that they had Troy do something because I feel like we've seen maybe a bit too much of Data saving the day at this point. So I was glad that he sort of has a secondary role in this one where he's really just managing the ship and he's not solving the problem.
Right.
And I appreciated that. It's, you know, I guess Troy has her scene with Worf. It's not great, but it's at least she kind of talks him down, you know?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not, you know, begrudging it for being a Troy episode. I just think that they're not, I just wish they were doing better at giving her stuff to do, you know?
Yeah, I'd agree.
Well,
with that.
I feel that Troy is the worst character, even worse than Geordi. How do you guys feel about her?
I feel like define worst. How do you define the?
Yeah,
I
feel like she's the most disposable.
Well, so, but Geordi redeems himself because he is good at the techno stuff. He does serve a purpose. There's stuff where I don't mind Geordi. But it's hard for me to find a scene where I can tolerate Troy. And she's the only – I mean, I like the episodes with her mom in it. I know I'm very rare for that reason. But at least that gives her something to do and something to react to that's real. But there's very little that Troy does for me. And I don't think she's a great actress. I don't think the writers knew what to do with her. And I don't know.
I think there's kind of a divide here because Troy has quite a bit of material, right? Crusher really has nothing going for her, but her performance isn't obnoxious.
She has one thing going for her.
What's that?
Her fantastic hair.
Her hair continues to be fantastic through season four, making a strong comeback. But I would consider Crusher completely disposable, you know, but she's not obviously irritating enough where you notice it all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Where Troy is really... They shove Troy in a lot of storylines, so she's constantly in your face about it. And I don't think the writing team knows what to do, and I don't think the actress is the best one to be doing the stuff that they've given to her.
I think what part of it is, and I don't know if this is bad writing or if they're not trying hard enough, but I think the reason that she stands out even more so than Crusher. I mean, I could give it to you that Crusher is probably more expendable than Troy is, given the amount of stuff that she does. But she has a specialty,
right? Yeah.
And Troy kinda has a specialty, but I don't even think the writers really know how to use it.
Yep.
So you know, if you've got an engine problem, okay, well then Geordi's going to be involved. If you've got a medical problem, okay, then the doctor's going to be involved. Everybody on the ship. This is going back to the first season. This is how they wrote these characters. They all have one thing that they are focused, like is one capital letter explanation of their character. And Troy doesn't really have that.
Yeah. I think that's kind of it.
It made me think about this episode in the next season, I think, where the ship is split into three or something, and it's an emergency, and Troy is the highest ranking officer, so she has to be captain.
Yep.
And after this, she just starts to take like training to be a command or something like that.
Yep.
And she has to make this really hard decision of like, what do you do with the situation? It's kind of like the Komiyashi, whatever it's called.
Yeah. Kobayashi Maru.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Fucking
and
nerd.
The, the solution is she sends Geordi to his death. because that's the best way to save everyone else.
Wait, yep. Is this an actual episode, or is this something that you wrote in your high school notebook?
No. Yeah. I know. It sounds better the way I described it, but she sends him back to the engine to fix it, even though it's radioactive, and he does it, and she kills. She lets him die beat this test.
Yeah, she gives them the opportunity to do it, even though the bridge at the time doesn't know if anyone's alive, so she sort of lets people go off on their own way. Yeah, I mean, they eventually realize that she has to be able to do something other than what we've been seeing so long.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think you're right, Clay, that, I mean, the problem is just that everyone kind of has a role that makes a lot of sense at this point. Where her role is undefined and these scripts are uninterested in doing it.
Right. The worst thing to happen to Troy is Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, absolutely.
Because Whoopi Goldberg just takes over. She's way better at everything.
I'm surprised she didn't have a scene in this one where she did that, because she does that all the time. But this is the only Guinan episode where she hasn't shown up and given some sort of nugget of wisdom.
And the best thing to happen to Whoopi Goldberg are her hats.
Yes, the hats.
I want to see what Guinan's hat closet looks like.
Whoopi Goldberg, which she doesn't give little golden nuggets. She gives giant gold shits. Let's just be clear.
She does. And she molds them into a gun that she fires at the ceiling. I think I'm done talking about this one. I think I'm ready to give a rating and review. So I'm going to take a break, play a clip. Me, Clay, and Sean are going to come back, give our final thoughts about this one.
Occurs at a different frequency for Betazoids than for other humanoids. I believe the beings are using that frequency to communicate telepathically.
It is possible that this telepathic communication is creating interference in the REM sleep of other species. That would explain why the rest of our crew is not dreaming.
Counselor, what are these beings trying to tell us?
They're calling for help. I think they're trapped just like we are. Eyes in the dark could mean this twin star system.
Your hypothesis is certainly plausible.
All right, guys, convince me. Explain how I should rate on a 1 to 5 scale Night Terrors. Clay, do you want to start us off here?
Yeah, I was expecting a lot worse, especially the back and forth that you guys were having on Twitter made this sound like it was going to be a stinker.
Yep.
And I didn't think it was that bad. I think you know, they could have tightened it up and they could have changed a couple things to make it really work a little bit better. But I'm always a sucker for the dream episodes and nightmare episodes, because it's a little bit different. I think you're right, Wes. I think they could have, in the hands of someone who was more experienced with that sort of genre stuff, it probably would have hummed a little bit more. And also, it wasn't really the point, you know?
Stuff wasn't the point?
Yeah.
Oh, like, they could have. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
They could have spent a lot of more. They could have spent a lot more time on that stuff if they really wanted to. But that wasn't. It was just sort of like accenting the you know, on their way to point B.
Yep.
So I would probably give it. That's tough. I'll give it a 3. I mean, I didn't hate it. I think it's right in the middle.
Yep. Sean, what'd you think?
I'm going to go 3 as well. I went into it thinking it was a 2 because I did the same thing that you did, Wes, whereas all I remember was Troy floating around.
Yes.
I remember thinking, that sucks. I forgot about Data. I forgot about some of these other things. There's a lot here that could be salvaged.
Yep.
We talked about the ways we would make it better. I mean, I almost want to have a whole podcast just about Troy and wanting to know what the fuck went wrong.
Wanted to figure it out. Well, I mean, sorry, I'll just wrap this up. I think that in opposition to what Clay was saying, I kind of think that the creepy stuff was like the genesis of this episode.
I'm sure it probably was. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wish there was, I think some of it was really good. I don't think any of it was bad. I think every scene where they are sort of experiencing weirdness, even though this plot idea is kind of cliche in sci-fi at this point, I enjoyed it, and I thought it was pretty good. Even the Troy floating around, it was sort of saved by the voice, which is two eyes in the darkness, one moon circles, or whatever that line is. It's remarkable, I guess, or something worth remembering. I'm going to give this one a... This one's a tough one to rate. I think it's better than a 3, but not much. I think I'm going to give it a 3. It's not quite a 4, but I think it's slightly above average, if that makes sense. But I'll give it a 3. Yeah, guys, did you learn anything from this episode? Did anything change or any minds get changed about anything at all?
I learned the Data doesn't need a crew.
Yeah. Data should just get his own ship.
Doesn't need to sleep, I guess, is the interesting thing. And the we learned that Riker has some intense brooding hostility towards Picard when Picard tells him to take a nap, which was interesting.
Oh, yeah, that was good.
he gave him a good Riker cold shoulder saunter out of the turbo lift. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, man, that scene with Worf really took me out of it. Because, I mean, like, it's literally the thing that's written in your character description is you're an empath. Yep. And you go in and he's sitting there with a knife to his own neck. And you're like, how are you feeling?
You having a good time there, buddy? You having a good time? Cool, guys. Thank you very much for coming on. If everyone listened to this, if you enjoyed what you listened to today, a like and a comment on YouTube is appreciated. Rating a review on iTunes help gets the show out there. We're going to be back in a couple days with Identity Crisis. Are you guys excited for that one?
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Identity Crisis. I'm interested to see whether or not they liked Identity Crisis more or less than the Night Terrors episode. Thank you, guys. I'll see you later. Good question.